Hello, welcome to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast, where it is all about helping amazing physicians just like you create a wealthy life free from burnout and with the financial security to practice medicine on your own terms. I'm your host, Dr. Elisa Zhang. If you missed the Learn Your Number for Financial Freedom workshop last month, I've got some good news for you. I'm doing the workshop again on Saturday, February 18th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. In the workshop, you'll learn how to calculate how much assets you need to achieve financial freedom. People who attended the workshop found it valuable and others missed it who wanted to join. I did not record the workshop because it's meant to be a workshop and not a lecture. During the workshop, you can ask questions openly or anonymously. We can go over your specific situation. For entry to the workshop, email proof of purchase of the book Made for More, Physician Entrepreneurs Who Live Life and Practice Medicine on Their Own Terms to wealthymindsetcoaching@gmail.com. You can also go to www.growyourwealthymindset.com/workshop for more details. I hope to see you there. And now for our regularly scheduled podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. Probably one of the most important but elusive topics when it comes to investing is asset allocation. Many personal finance books simplify asset allocation into what percentage of stocks versus bonds to hold in one's portfolio. However, asset allocation can actually be much more complicated than just stocks versus bonds. When you're looking at stocks alone, you may ask what portion of your stock portfolio should be domestic stock versus international stock. You could also question what percentage should be in large cap, mid cap, or small cap companies. And if you really want to, you could overcomplicate asset allocation by thinking about all the different sectors within the stock market, including energy, materials, industrials, utilities, healthcare, finances, consumer discretionary, consumer staples, information technology, communication services, and real estate. The same goes with bonds. There are federal government bonds, as well as municipal bonds from other branches of government, and corporate bonds. Federal bonds could be short, intermediate, or long-term. Corporate bonds come in different ratings dependent on the creditworthiness of the company issuing the bond. Asset allocation can also include diversification beyond stocks and bonds. Many people add real estate to their portfolio. There are multiple ways to invest in real estate, including owning individual properties, investing with other investors in a syndication project, or investing in a real estate fund. There's also investing in REITs or real estate investment trusts where you can actually do that from the stock market by buying publicly traded shares. You can also invest in the equity side of real estate or the debt side. There are some financial gurus who also recommend adding gold or precious metals for further diversification. Commodities is another asset class to consider. You can see why it took me a while to create a podcast episode on this particular financial topic. And yet, asset allocation is the best way to decrease having large fluctuations in the value of your portfolio. Ideally, you want to have investments in different asset classes that are not correlated with each other. This was a point I discussed in podcast episode 24 on preparing for the next recession. So in order to bring you more information on asset allocation, I turned to several different books. If you read A Simple Path to Wealth, published in 2016, J.L. Collins recommends you stick with VTSAX, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund, and VBTLX, the Vanguard Total Bond Market Index Fund. In his chapter on asset allocation, he favors 100% VTSAX when in the wealth accumulation stage, which is when you are regularly working and bringing in income to save and invest. Once you enter the wealth preservation stage, where you're stepping away from your job and needing to live off the income of your investment, then he recommends adding in bonds. He argues that the returns of 100% stocks versus having an 80% stock, 20% bond mix is fairly similar. So for simplicity, he just goes with 100% stock. J.L. Collins doesn't feel like international stocks is necessary since large U.S. companies are really international businesses, many of which generate 50% or more of their sales and profits from outside of the United States. Alan Roth, the author of How a Second Grader Beats Wall Street, which was published in 2009, offers the second grader portfolio as well as the advanced second grader portfolio with asset allocation for those who want to be aggressive, moderate, or conservative in their investing. The second grader portfolio consists of low-cost index funds of the total U.S. stock market, total international stock market, and the total bond market. An aggressive asset allocation is 60% in the total U.S. stock market, 30% in the international stock market, and 10% in the total bond market. Conservative would be 20% U.S. stock, 10% international stock, and a whole 70% in U.S. bonds. If you are looking for something more moderate, then it's just the midpoint between the aggressive and conservative percentages. The advanced second grader portfolio adds in REITs and precious metals to the portfolio. The aggressive asset allocation consists of 54% total U.S. stock, 27% total international stock, 6% REITs, 3% precious metals, and 10% total bonds. For the conservative side, it's 18% total U.S. stock, 10% international stock, 2% REITs, no precious metals, and 70% total bonds. Alan Roth is the founder of a financial planning and investment advisory firm that advises on $500 million in assets for about 100 clients, so he probably knows something about asset allocation. When it comes to asset allocation, Jim Daly, the founder of The White Coat Investor, gives the following guidelines in his financial bootcamp book, which was published in 2019. What he recommends is, one, choose a stock to bond ratio of somewhere between 75 to 25 and 25 to 75. Two, invest somewhere between 20 and 50% of your stocks in international stocks. And three, aim for 3 to 7 total asset classes with no more than 40% and no less than 5% in any one asset class. Examples he gives are, one, 30% U.S. stocks, 30% international stocks, and 40% U.S. bonds. Two, 30% U.S. stocks, 25% international stocks, 5% REITs, and 40% U.S. bonds. Three, 30% U.S. stocks, 25% international stocks, 5% REITs, 30% U.S. bonds, 10% inflation-protected bonds, or TIPS. Four, 25% U.S. bonds, 20% international stocks, 10% small value stocks, 5% REITs, 30% U.S. bonds, and 10% inflation-protected bonds. Five, 25% U.S. stocks, 15% international stocks, 10% small value stocks, 5% REITs, 5% precious metal equities, 30% U.S. bonds, and 10% inflation-protected bonds. The next book I'll talk about is Money, Master the Game, which was published in 2014. In this book, Tony Robbins writes that he interviewed, quote, more than 50 self-made billionaires, Nobel Prize winners, investment titans, best-selling authors, professors, and financial legends. The book includes 12 interviews, of which the topic of asset protection comes up in many of them. In his interview with David Swensen, who turned Yale's $1 billion in assets to $23.9 billion with 13.9% annual returns, says, quote, asset allocation actually explains more than 100% of returns in investing, end quote. He recommended a portfolio of 70% equities and 30% fixed income. For equities, he recommended 30% in the U.S. total stock market index fund, 15% in foreign developed equities, 10% in emerging markets, 15% in real estate investment trusts, and for fixed income, he recommended 15% treasury bonds and 15% in inflation-protected TIPS. Tony also talked to Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, who brought index funds to the general public. Jack Bogle recommends asset allocation in accordance to your risk tolerance and objective, which is wise advice for anyone. However, it doesn't help you decide what to hold in your portfolio. A crude benchmark that was given was to have as much in bond funds as your age. That being said, when Jack was in his 80s, he had 40% of his portfolio invested in bonds and 60% in stocks, most of which were in Vanguard index funds. The bond portion was split between Vanguard's total bond market index fund, Vanguard's intermediate term tax exempt fund, and Vanguard's limited term tax exempt fund. But the real focus of this book was based on what he learned from Ray Dalio. Ray Dalio is the founder and co-chief investment officer of Bridgewater Associates, where he is involved in running the largest hedge fund in the world, valued, according to the book, at $160 billion. According to Ray, there are four things that move the price of assets. Number one, inflation. Number two, deflation. Number three, rising economic growth. Number four, declining economic growth. The price of assets are based on the expectations of what will happen. This leads to four economic seasons. One, higher than expected inflation with rising prices. Two, lower than expected inflation or deflation. Three, higher than expected economic growth. And four, lower than expected economic growth. Unlike the four seasons of spring, summer, winter, and fall, the economic seasons have no order in which they arrive and no general timeline in how long they will last. When you look at the price of a stock or bond today, the price incorporates the expected performance of the future. This is why a company that's profitable and growing, but is growing slower than expected, has a drop in their stock share price. A company that grows beyond expectation is rewarded with an increase in their stock share price. The idea behind the all seasons portfolio is to be equally covered in all four possible economic seasons. When the all seasons portfolio was compared against the S&P 500 for the past few years, there were less years with a loss, and the magnitude of the losses were much less. The average annualized return from 1984 to 2014 was 9.72% for the all seasons portfolio, per Tony Robbins in the book, versus 11% for the S&P 500. So what is the all seasons portfolio composed of? Well, here it is. 30% in stocks, like an S&P 500 index fund, 15% in intermediate US bonds, like 7 to 10 year treasuries, 40% in long-term bonds, which are 20 to 25 year treasuries, 7.5% in gold, and 7.5% in commodities. So it's pretty straightforward on how to buy stocks and bonds, but what about investing in gold or commodities? There are three general ways to invest in gold. You can buy gold in the form of gold coins or in bar form. This does have some costs associated with storing the gold, either in a home safe or safety deposit box, as well as purchasing insurance for the gold. It may be easier to buy gold funds, either mutual funds or exchange-traded funds. SPDR Gold Shares, ticker symbol GLD, is an example of a gold ETF where each share represents 1 ounce of gold. A more advanced method of buying gold is with gold future options. Investing in commodities is probably the most difficult of the asset classes to add to one's portfolio. Unfortunately, Tony Robbins did not elaborate when he was doing the modeling on the returns for the Four Seasons portfolio, which benchmark he used for commodities. While Vanguard does have a VCMDX commodity strategy fund, its inception was only in 2019, so it doesn't have much historical data. It uses as its benchmark the Bloomberg Commodity Index Total Return, but has not been able to match it that closely. The one-year return on VCMDX, at the time I researched this part of the episode, was 10.46% compared to 11.8% for the Bloomberg Commodity Index. The three-year return on the VCMDX is 17.88%, which actually outperformed the 13.45% of the Bloomberg Commodity Index, but that does seem like it's significantly off. The Bloomberg Commodity Index, abbreviated BCOM, is calculated on the excess return basis and reflects commodity futures price movements. The index rebalances annually, weighted two-thirds by trading volume and one-third by world production, and weight caps are applied at the commodity, sector, and group level for diversification. BCOM, the Bloomberg Commodity Index, provides broad-based exposure to commodities, and no single commodity or commodity sector dominates the index. Rather than being driven by microeconomic events affecting one commodity market or sector, the diversified commodity exposure of the Bloomberg Commodity Index potentially reduces volatility in comparison to non-diversified commodity investments. So what makes up commodities? Well, commodities include energy, like crude oil, natural gas, and refined gas, as well as metals, like gold, silver, platinum, palladium, copper, aluminum, zinc, and tin, and agriculture, like corn, wheat, oats, rice, soy, canola, coca, coffee, sugar, wool, lumber, rubber, and livestock. With all the things that make up commodities as a whole, you can see why determining asset allocation, even within the commodity sector, is not straightforward. Investors hoping to get into the commodity market can do so in several different ways. They can invest directly in the physical commodity or indirectly by purchasing shares of commodity companies, mutual funds, or exchange-traded funds. While silver and gold are commodities that aren't difficult to purchase and store, as I mentioned before, other commodities such as base metals like aluminum, zinc, and copper are valuable only in huge quantities, making it much more inconvenient to actually hold the physical commodity. One way to invest in them is through stocks of producers like Alcoa and U.S. Steel. But then you're not just investing in the value of the commodity, but how well that company is managed as well. Oil futures are a favorite of day traders and can be bought and sold through brokerages that specialize in futures trading. It is quite volatile and not for the faint of heart. It's definitely something I have no interest in doing. Then there are funds like U.S. Oil Fund that tracks the movement of West Texas Intermediate like sweet crude oil. You could also buy shares of mutual funds for the energy sector ETFs. For example, holding ETFs like SPDR, S&P Metals and Mining ETF provides exposure to companies involved in metals and mining. If you want to try to implement the all-season portfolio, you could actually do this at Vanguard by purchasing the VTSAX Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund, VSIGX, the Vanguard Intermediate Term Treasury Index Fund, VLGSX, Vanguard's Long-Term Treasury Index Fund, SPDR, Gold Shares, ticker symbol GLD, which is that ETF where each share represents an ounce of gold, and VCMDX Commodity Strategy Fund, which I mentioned earlier. So after hearing about all these options, what asset allocation appeals to you? Do you like the simplicity of J.L. Collins' 100% total U.S. stock market index? Are you more of a second grader type of investor where you're going to add in some international stock or even possibly some REITs and precious metals? Or are you going to put your trust in Tony Robbins and go with the Four Seasons portfolio recommended by Ray Dalio? For me personally, I do invest in the Total Stock Market Index Fund as well as Total Bond Index Market Fund. I also have some investment in iBonds. I do invest quite a bit of my portfolio in real estate. There's a little bit in REITs, but most of the real estate is actually directly owned property or investing in syndication projects. I also have investment in a real estate fund. Other than the jewelry I own, I haven't really bought much in gold, but it is something I would consider doing. I've yet to invest in commodities, but having researched for this episode, the Vanguard Commodities Index Fund, I might actually consider doing so. If you're really interested in diving deeper into asset allocation, there is a great book called The Intelligent Asset Allocator, written by William Bernstein, who's actually a physician. William Bernstein, PhD MD, is a retired neurologist and co-principal at the money management firm Efficient Frontier Advisors. I actually got a chance to meet him at the White Coat Investor Conference in 2022 and got him to sign one of the books that he wrote. So the fact that there are so many different options shows that there's not truly one right option. And that means that in a way you can't really go wrong because no one really knows the future. Right? No one can predict where stocks are going, bonds, precious metals, commodities, or any of these different asset classes. The important thing is to buy assets. That is how you build wealth, by buying assets. Ideally, you want assets that will grow in value, and even better, if the money makes more money, which is one reason I love real estate. Real estate not only appreciates in value, but you can actually get positive cash flow from it as well. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. It's been months in the making as I've read and reread books in order to prepare for it. Thanks again for listening to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. I'll see you again next week. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you could share it with your friends and colleagues. And now for the disclaimer. I am not a certified financial planner, accountant, or attorney, and nothing I say should be construed as professional investment, tax, or legal advice. This show is primarily for your education and entertainment. I am a physician, but I'm probably not your physician. So if you need any medical advice, please contact your own physician. Thank you.